Young Turks. It is 4:20, appropriately, Jimmy Dore will be hosting Aggressive Progressives later tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern. Ambria Allen, Hannah Cranston, joining us for this hour. Guys, before we get started, I got a bunch of things that I got to tell folks. Number one, another programming note from tonight on facebook.com/TYTpolitics at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Jordan Cheriton is going to be covering a town hall that the mayor is doing in Flint, Michigan. Jordan's had a tremendous impact over there. By the way, a scary story we didn't get to today. You know how Reuters found out there's 3,000 different cities that have lead poisoning in their water worse than Flint? Well, they're getting more specific. So, for example, here in Los Angeles, it is most of the county that has the problem. So, wow, our lead levels are higher than Flint. Now, we all panicked and checked our different areas that we live in to see if it affected us. Unsurprisingly, it affects poorer neighborhoods more. So Beverly Hills doesn't have it, but Inglewood does. But it's not just poor neighborhoods. So places like South Pasadena, and many others here in LA have the same kind of lead poisoning in the water. So that's affecting our kids, and it is disastrous. I mean, you want to talk about infrastructure? That's what we need to fix. So. And by the way, it becomes a little different when it's your kids that are on the line. As much as we care about it and we cover it nonstop, when I saw that it was in LA, I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So, all right. Now, other things that are going on. I got a rally in Washington, D.C. That we're going to do, and I want you to know how you could actually attend it. That's going to be on April 30th after the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So you can text TYT to 228466. So text the letters TYT to 228466, or go to tytnetwork.com/get updates. By the way, tytnetwork.com/resistance also works. Because I am going to talk about the resistance, and I'm going to explain what the resistance is, because I think that the media is getting it wrong. And only 9 days left now in our campaign for the journalism drive. If you do give $127, you can get this House TYT t-shirt, this Game of Thrones and TYT combined there. So that's tytnetwork.com/go. And today is 4:20, so we do have at shoptyt.com some shirts, like including here. I'm going to reach back to show you the one I showed you from the first hour, in case you missed it. Well, this one that I was wearing earlier today. Okay, fun. Kind of gives you a sense of the festivities of the day. And finally, let me read a couple of tweets. Laura Gelazuna says the world changes and so should the Constitution. That's what progressives think. Conservative jurists don't agree. Ironic that some so-called progressive groups in D.C. don't agree either. Don't you see, I'm loco, writes it. It's a fun handle. Common cause is afraid of becoming irrelevant if money is taken out of politics. I don't think you're loco at all. I don't see that. I think you're exactly right. I think a lot of the groups in Washington have been around for 40 to 50 years. And they think if we solve the problems, we're out of a job. Whereas Wolfpack is all volunteers, a couple of staffers, and every staffer before we hire him, we go, you understand, the whole point is to get the amendment, and then we're out of business. We're done, right? Okay? Mm-hmm. And everybody signs on to that, and they're going to go back to their jobs, their teachers, mechanics. It could work in construction, etc. Chris Duran says, I guess that morality and decency runs in the Gabbard family, because one of our biggest supporters in Hawaii is Mike Gabbard, the father of Tulsi Gabbard. And he's been with us from day one all the way 3 years ago. So I think you're quite right about that. Okay, I've talked a lot. Hannah, what's next?
All right. After Bill O'Reilly's departure from Fox News that was announced yesterday, many of his O'Reilly Factor fans have come out to express their disappointment with the decision, even threatening to boycott Fox News as a form of protest. Now, they have taken their concerns to Facebook. Now, Fox News' Facebook hasn't actually addressed the issue yet, so they're just sort of commenting on other articles. And so I'm going to read you some of my personal favorites. Now, this one says, but the real story now is bye-bye Fox. I found Fox News because of Bill, and I'll leave because of Bill. Let some two-bit tramps claim harassment, whatever. Sorry, but as a woman, I know far too well that the thought of dollars does to some, and face it, men with his cash and position will get hit. So get the facts, admit you're wrong, take him back, or sink into the shithole CNN is in. Y'all deserve each other.
So let's pause there on Shelley. Yeah,
let's do that.
Yeah. So Shelley Marie just said, as a woman, I know far too well what the thought of dollars does to some. Like, I wonder if she really thought that she's like pro women, or if she's like, no, no, women are terrible. I know, because as a woman, I know that there's a lot of money grubbing people out there.
Right.
I mean, do you guys think she gets it, or she's absolutely, and is against women? Because, you know, look, we interviewed a whole bunch of people on TYT Politics during the campaign, guys, and they'd be women saying, we can't have a women president. You know, that's dangerous. We can't have it. So she might either be like, yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Men are better than us. Or she might actually think that she's a champion of women and know that other women are just looking for cash.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where she stands on women in general. I think in this particular case, when you are specifically talking about women who come out and express their concerns or express their experience with sexual harassment, you are walking into really, really dangerous territory, right? Because she's basically saying that these women are falsifying their claims. And that is so awful, because so much of the media and so much of society already shames women and tells women that they're wrong for coming out. And these women are so brave to have come out, especially with somebody, with against somebody who has so much clout and with so much money. And that is such a brave move on their part to then be a woman, all right, Shelley, to then be a woman and say, oh, these tramps are just trying to get their, you know, 15 minutes or just trying to get their money is so despicable, because like the percentage of women who come out and it's a false report or something like that is so, so small compared to the percentage of women who are facing sexual assault or rape. And it is just, you are just perpetuating the stigma, and it's really unfortunate that as a woman, Shelley, that you did this.
It's just real quick, in this case, the harassment, I mean, the proof's in the pudding, Fox News settled the cases. Five cases, $13 million, they paid it out. In the case of, for example, Andrea Tantaros, they have not settled. They said, no, no, that one we didn't actually do. So they know what they did and what they didn't do. And in the case of the five settlements, let alone the new charges against Bill O'Reilly, on the old ones, Fox News was like, yeah, we did it. That's why we paid the $13 million. O'Reilly did do it. It's not two big tramps. They were real women who were working in the workplace that, like you might be, Shelley. And then they had this guy who tried to, you know, sexually harass them, and he masturbated while on the phone with them when they didn't ask for it. And now you're calling them tramps? Is it possible that maybe he's the one that's wrong here, given how much money they paid out?
Yeah, I agree. I think women can perpetuate sexist ideologies, and they can't internalize misogyny and then perpetuate that against other women. And it, her statement is leaking with anti-women sentiments.
Yeah.
I think she uses her own personal identity, saying I'm a woman, not to try to lend legitimacy to you know, these ridiculous claims. I don't think that she's actually trying to identify with the experiences of women. I think she's ridiculous.
Well, you know, that's actually what Fox has taught them, right? Because if they watch Fox, I was going to do a story, we ran out of time today. They bring on African Americans, this guy called the Black Sphere or the Black Sphincter or something. And he comes out and he says, oh, you know, all black people are the ones at fault. And they bring on women to say women are the ones that are at fault. So after being programmed like that, she's like, it is women's fault. It doesn't matter.
Sure.
Must protect Bill O'Reilly.
And yeah, and they find these people to work as tokens, right? To be as if all women believe the same things, as if all people of color, right? You can have one person and they can represent one race or one gender, right? Like, but you know, it just treats people as monoliths, and that's it's ridiculous. And it was rife with misspellings. So.
Yeah, yeah, very, very true. No, I think you're completely right. I did like a Facebook video on the wage gap, and there were some women who commented and were like, "Well, I'm a woman, and I'm paid the same as my male coworker, so it doesn't exist." And I was like, that's anecdotal evidence. But you are right about internalized misogyny. Anne Hathaway just came out with a piece about that. So I do think that might be the case with Shelley. But let's look at what some other commenters had to say. Michael Brenzel says, Fox News is off my viewing list. I will only watch Hannity until you decide to give in to the liberals and find a way to take him off too. So, doesn't totally make sense there.
No, actually, it's the opposite of sense. So let me explain. So if it was a liberal plot, how come they didn't do it to Hannity? Because I can't stand Sean Hannity. I think he's not a very bright guy. I totally disagree with him. But there are no charges of sexual harassment against Sean Hannity. because there's no plan. There was no, it was Bill O'Reilly and Roger Ailes doing this over and over again over decades before right. anybody knew they were even going to be on Fox. As Roger Ailes was doing it with the Merv Griffin show, mm-hmm. you know, like four decades ago. It's not a liberal plan. If it was, why didn't we target Hannity? Right? Because Hannity didn't do it. Right. That's why.
Right. No, that's true. Let's go to the next comment here. Jim Mockard says, I'm very disappointed on the O'Reilly dismissal. I've just lost my 8 p.m. viewing habit, so I think I will be the opinion of many viewers who should just turn off Fox News as it's become too mainstream. This is really frustrating because I don't understand what he means by it's become too mainstream. You mean that they dismiss people who sexually assault people in their workplace? Is that what he means by mainstream?
Yeah, but actually, Hannah, like, I think they do mean that. I think they a lot of these guys here that are commenting are like, oh, the good old days. When by the good old days, I mean when we could sexually harass women and get away with it. Now the mainstream says we can't do that anymore. Like they're like real people, and they have the same rights as us. Ugh, mainstream.
Yeah. All right, one more comment for you guys. Another woman, Cecilia Renner Brazee, says, opinion. If Bill O'Reilly sexually harassed women, he is stupid. Okay, she goes, fact, women who wear dresses up to their mid-thigh and sleeveless low-cut tops show too much skin. So she had me for the first sentence, sorta. And then she lost me with the whole slut-shaming part that she did.
No,
thanks, Cecilia.
It doesn't make sense. Well, one, it's an incomplete thought. What is the rest of that sentence? Also, I hate this notion that women just being in the workplace are distractions, right? That we have to manage our gender, we have to manage our appearance so that we can prevent sexual harassment or assault. It's ridiculous. And it's old. It's old.
Yeah, it's so old. It's the what was she wearing? That's essentially what Cecilia is doing in that comment. And that's we're done with that. That's such an antiquated thing. We know so much more about how to approach sexual harassment in the workplace and how to approach relations with women. It's just
so look at the assumptions layered into that, which is that men belong in the workplace and women. Well, hey, we let you in, so be careful and don't tempt us. We're special snowflakes, right? If I see your ankle or your elbow, I might go crazy. I mean, their view of men is also horrific, by the way. And it reminds me of fundamentalist Islam. Like, oh my God, if you see anybody's elbow, the guys can't control themselves. Well, if they're Bill O'Reilly or Roger Ailes, apparently that's true.
Right.
But for the rest of us, that is not true.
Right.
And then finally, for her, I mean, the unbelievable irony of it, I know she's ignorant, but if she knew the facts, she would know at Fox News, you're not allowed to wear pants if you're a woman. Did you know that? And we now know that from anchors that were at Fox News who've confirmed it, people who went through the sexual harassment training, which is hilarious at Fox News.
Right.
And there, I don't know, maybe they trained people to do it. But
right.
One of the anchors asked, female anchors, my boss says to me, I must wear these skirts that I'm not allowed to wear pants. Is that true? And the person doing the training is like, yes, that's right. Okay, so then the audience turns around and goes, look at those sluts in skirts. When Fox News told them they must wear it.
And I want to know the rationale behind the no pantsuit, you know, decision. Is it to sexualize women? Is it because women in pantsuits represent some kind of position of equality, right? That we're wearing the same clothes and I'm not marked as a woman? I just wonder, what's the rationale?
Well, look, just real quick on that. I'm sure that it's a little bit of both, but mainly because they're perverts. Remember, the guy running it was Roger Ailes. Dozens of sexual harassment lawsuits, including allegations of sexual assault, where he would take his pants off and run around and try to touch women. Okay, so and he watched Fox News. This is a legendary piece of information about Ailes that everybody concedes to, everybody knows. He would watch Fox News with the volume turned off. So they had to look the proper roles, okay? And so he wouldn't have the desks, and he would make all the women wear skirts, and they were all his vision of 1950s beauties, right?
Who don't have a voice. He puts it on mute. And these are women who look good for him who don't have a voice.
I mean, look at outnumbered. First of all, again, I love that assumption that is from a male perspective. It's supposed to be a show that features four women as hosts, but the name of it is Outnumbered because the guy is outnumbered.
Right.
It is obvious from a male perspective anyway. And what are the four women forced to do? They're forced to sit there with no desk, and they all must wear skirts and cross their legs. That's Fox News.
Yeah.
Are we surprised given who ran it and who was their top host? But their followers never say die. They're like, yes, the right. old days when women had no power and we could just treat them as sex objects. Liberals, I hate you for taking that away. All right, well, at least we know where you stand.
All right, moving on. A sixth grade teacher in Florida gave his students an anti-Muslim reading assignment. Now, this text describes Islam as monstrous and the Quran as ridiculous, immoral, and corrupting. Now, the school says that they have reprimanded teacher Mark Smith, a religion and social studies teacher at Blessed Trinity Catholic School in Ocala, who gave students printouts of a 19th century Catholic text that refers to Islam as a monstrous mixture of faiths. It also calls the doctrines of the Prophet Muhammad ridiculous, immoral, and corrupting. So the assignment that he gave to his students was this excerpt from an 1853 text about Islam by priest Giovanni Bosco, okay? Now, the text is sort of like it goes back and forth between a father and a son. And the father explains how Jesus Christ is superior to the Prophet Muhammad, who degrades and dishonors human nature, and by placing all happiness in sensual pleasures, reduces man to the level of filthy animals.
Can we just pause there for a second? So wait, the problem with Islam is that it's too sexual? That's the first I'm hearing that. I mean, they had to go back to 1853 to find a guy who thought, I mean, those perverts in Islam, I mean, they will not stop showing all their women. And now, of course, the talking points are reversed. Right. Those terrible guys in Islam, all they do is cover up their women and subjugate them, etc. Guess what, guys? Sometimes it turns out these things are sociopolitical, they're cultural, and they depend on who's winning, who's losing, who's in charge, and the time period. So if you wanted to go to a more contemporary Catholic doctrine, you would actually find out that all the recent popes actually preach that that we should have tolerance for Islam, we should get along, and there should be mutual understanding. But you didn't want to quote the popes, you wanted to selectively go back to 1853 so you could find a guy who hates Islam and makes up things like it is too sensual.
Yeah. No, I mean, so let me read a few more excerpts from this real quick, just so that you get the gravity of this. And then I want to comment on what you just said. So Muhammad is described as a charlatan, a villain, ignoramus, imposter, and false prophet, and who couldn't even write and propagate his religion, not through miracles or persuasive words, but by military force. It says that the Quran, the holy book of Islam, is also called the series of errors, the most enormous ones being against morality and the worship of the true God. So I think you're right, Cenk, right? Because I do know that Catholicism and the popes have come out to support the religion of Islam. And so this is why this is so frustrating, because this is a religious teacher. So you would assume that he would be up on his religion and know that that is what we are talking about in this day and age. And especially when you have sort of impressionable young students, you could claim that he is teaching like this historical text from a priest. But that's really dangerous, right? Because it's important that we're teaching youth what our religion believes, right? Or what religion is about, if that's what his goal is at this Catholic school. But at the same time, like, don't teach that just because like somebody said it in history doesn't mean that you need to repeat it. Do you know what I mean?
Of course, and you need a full context. If you said, hey, this guy says that in 1853, but I actually look at the edict in 1965 by Pope John Paul VI, I believe, Pope Paul VI, says that we should treat Islam with esteem, and you give both sides of it. In fact, I'll be honest with you, my professor in college who taught Introduction to Islam, a wonderful Irish guy, but I don't think he gave proper context because he only showed it in a positive light. And I thought he should have also focused on the negative parts of Islam and the parts that aren't true, right? So look, to me, give full context. But if you do this hatchet job, you're doing it for a political purpose.
Absolutely. And I think he's well aware of it seems that there's an agenda that kind of undergirds this lesson plan. I want to know what the reprimanding was, why he wasn't removed. I just feel like this sets a tone for the classroom. And obviously, it's made students uncomfortable. It's made the community uncomfortable. So I just wonder what the recourse is for, you know, these actions and how he's been punished or what, you know.
Well, that's a statement. They said he's been reprimanded. I mean, that doesn't really do much, especially when you're already exposed this to these kids, essentially. And the whole process of going through like a religion class is to learn about other religions and just like gain an understanding. And this isn't really gaining them, giving them an understanding. It's showing them some real disgusting hatred and propaganda against a religion.
Yeah, so look, Catholic school gets to decide, it's a private school, mm-hmm. what they want to do. But don't misunderstand the situation. Local religious leaders, from imams to rabbis to priests, have come out against teaching it this way, mm-hmm. and they said that it's wrong, and it is actually against Catholic doctrine. So he's even teaching Catholic right. doctrine wrong. And then finally, it just when you thought it was horrible as it is, there's extra parts in there that is not quote. I read the actual text that he sent out. It's from 1853. Of course, it's going to have terrible parts, let alone all the things he said about Islam. And he said, referring to Muhammad, he couldn't even write it. And in composing his Quran, he was assisted by a Jew. Right, and you know, like, oh, just when you thought it was bad, right? And look, he says it's riddled with errors. Well, I would agree with that, right? But you want to look at the Bible? You want to look at the Old Testament? You want to look at the New Testament? We're gonna have a conversation about errors. And so I don't think you want to open up that can of worms. And then finally, to that point, he says, you know, you quoted monstrous mixture. Here's right. the rest of the quote. This is. That Muhammad's religion consists of a monstrous mixture of Judaism, paganism, and Christianity.
Do you know whose religion also incorporates Judaism?
And paganism, by the way. We just had Easter.
Hey.
Can you show me where the Easter bunny is in the Bible? I don't know if you know this, that and the eggs and the chocolate all come from paganism. So a mix of Judaism, Christianity, and paganism is the Bible.
I don't know that it's the Bible or if it's people's expression of or trying to merge cultural events with real religious teaching. I know that Easter is not, or Easter eggs are not in the Bible. So I want to be careful.
But the New Testament includes Old Testament. Like that's part of Christianity, like, right?
Yeah. So here's the thing, Ambria, I hear you, and you know, you and I disagree a little bit.
Of course, that's why I'm here.
That's right. And God bless. Okay. And but you certainly concede that the Easter Bunny is paganism and is a ritual that Christians, not in the Bible, as you rightly point out, but Christians adopted so they could bring folks along in Europe who kind of like the old pagan traditions, like the Christmas tree and the bunny, etc.
I don't know.
Santa Claus isn't in the Bible, you know, and that's the same sort of concept.
Santa Claus is from Turkey.
But is the argument that these events are used by Christians to what? I guess is my question.
To seduce poor pagans. No, seriously.
I'm serious.
Seriously. To answer your question, yes, because there's a local. Look, this is my understanding of it. And I read it. It doesn't mean that what I read is 100% true or that I'm the biggest expert in the world on it, but I am. So there was a number of pagan traditions in Europe. And so as Christianity is coming up through the Middle East, they're like, oh, okay, the Germanic tree, they got that from the pagan tradition in the Germanic areas, right? So it's of course not called a Christmas tree at the time. It celebrates sure. the fact that the reason they picked that particular tree is because the leaves don't fall off of it, right? The bunny multiplies, and hence the rebirth of spring. Eggs, birth, spring. These are all pagan traditions, mm-hmm. and in order to kind of seduce the pagans of Europe into like, well, come on, look, Jesus is about love. You guys like that? And you guys are going to go to heaven, and not the guys. The feudal lords, right, who own all the land, plus you get the money, and I'll throw in Santa Claus, right? So
gotcha.
That's my interpretation.
I gotcha. I got the trajectory here. Thank you for painting that picture.
And I'll throw in Santa Claus. Okay, all right.
Let's do another religion story real quick.
Oh. All right, sounds all right. good.
The internet is hot and cold over Katy Perry's latest Instagram post that features the Hindu goddess Kali. So take a look at the Instagram that she posted on Wednesday. Now, She wrote hashtag current mood when she posted this picture of the goddess. And she's facing the wrath of many Indians who find the post insensitive and also a form of cultural appropriation. Now, I'm going to read you some of the comments that she received as backlash to this post. It says it's not right to use God as a meme. You can't just post God and use it as current mood, as you're basically trying to say, oh, look, I'm so like God, which is very rude and disrespectful. Please delete this, says one. This is not current mood. You don't know the real truth behind this picture. Respect every religion. Now, Kali is the destroyer of evil, and she is the divine mother in the Hindu religion. So I like to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, and I like to offer these sort of situations as a means of education, right? And maybe she didn't know, and you know, the commenters are providing her a little bit of education with a backlash. Except that Katy Perry kind of has a history with some cultural appropriation issues, right? So back during the 2013 American Music Awards, she donned a geisha costume and got backlash for that. In her Dark Horse music video, she dressed as an ancient Egyptian and got backlash for that. And then during a Rolling Stones article, she says, I guess I'll just stick to baseball and hot dogs and that's it. I know that's a quote that's gonna come to F me in the ass, but can't you appreciate a culture? I guess like everybody has to stay in their lane, I don't know. So it's like she knows she's doing something that's wrong. She's aware, and she says like it's gonna F her in the ass. She knows that she's gonna get backlash over this. So I don't know why she wants to offend people. Right?
I just want to do it. I want to do what I want to do without you know, consequence.
Yeah, I was very curious what your guys' reaction was on this, because I'm kind of on her side. Uh-oh, drums. Okay, so. But let's talk it out. I'm not sure I'm right. Okay, so let me tell you why. I think cultural appropriation is a thing that is used too much. And here's what I mean by that. In the old days, there was. So for example, Elvis takes the rock and roll, and then Elvis is awesome, but everybody else, the black guys who are doing it, are not good. They're shaking their hips too much. Now, I know Elvis got that criticism too, but a lot less than the African-American artists who actually created rock and roll. Mm-hmm. So that was when cultural appropriation was a thing that it was, you know, used against African Americans while you stole, you know, the ideas and the music and the art that they came up with. Now, I know that that still exists in a lot of forms today. But when we talk about, well, you took our food, or you took our part of our culture. Well, yeah, but it's America. We took the bagel and lox, and we took the hummus, and we took the pizza, and we took the pasta. We took all that stuff and called it America. So I don't think that she, like, you're right, Hannah, it's a good point that she does know that it could get her in trouble. Right. She's aware of that. But I don't think that she sent that tweet like, ha ha, Hindus, got you, right? She got married in India. She respects the culture. We don't know.
I agree with you, right? I do think there are lots of cases of cultural appropriation that we're still fighting against today, like when people dress up as Native Americans or when white women get a claim for wearing dreads and things like that. I think those are big issues that we're dealing with today. I do think that the term is sometimes overused, right? When you're talking about like campuses that are serving sushi and that's cultural appropriation, or people that are doing yoga or cultural appropriating that practice. I do think that it gets overused. I think in this case, what I tried to do, because I'm not as familiar with the Hindu religion, I tried to put it in the position of if like a prominent Jewish or a Muslim artist or something like that posted a picture of Jesus on the cross or something like that and said like hashtag current mood. Like that would,
yeah.
I think that would be pretty effed up, and I think people would take that as pretty effed up.
And so I can see
where they're coming from.
I hear you on that, and I'm being honest here that I'm having trouble escaping my own perspective. And my perspective as agnostic is, and like, okay, so that's Jesus, and so what? And when they draw Muhammad and people flip out, I'm like, yeah, but that's your religion. Everybody else didn't sign on to not drawing Muhammad. If they had, they'd be Muslims, right? And so, okay, you respect Kali, you know, and I'm not Hindu. So why do I have to believe the same things you believe?
Why do I have to respect it? I think that's hard. And I think there is a sensitivity around religious figures that may be marginalized. So maybe her using this symbol seems disrespectful, even if that wasn't her intent. And I think we can't always look at intent, because we don't know what her intent was, right, to try to, you know, absolve her of wrongdoing, to borrow from you know, legal speech. But I think in terms of cultural appropriation, it is a fine line. And I think to your point about, you know, expanding cultures and borrowing from cultures, I think that it's fine until you try to, you know, kind of benefit from cultural expressions that have been marginalized. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when Neiman Marcus sells soul food, it's like, what are you doing? You know, when they mark up the price, you know, 200%, it's like, this is teetering on the line of,
again, it's a wonderful disagreement, but they mark up Turkish rugs probably 800%.
And you can petition that, and you can be upset about that.
Well, I'm just not. Hey, have at it, Hoss.
It comes to the dynamic of, like, oppressed and oppressor. Do you know what I mean? If you look at historical context, I think a lot of that comes into play when we're talking about cultural appropriation. And Katy Perry, as a Christian white woman,
although she says she's not Christian.
Well, she was brought up Christian.
That's true.
Now she says that she doesn't believe in any religion, whatever. But I'm just saying, like, as somebody who was brought into this world and who came up with white privilege and grew up with Christian privilege, she does sort of fall into the position of oppressor for a lot of different things and potentially to how people will interpret it.
Okay, so then finally, let me say to my Indian friends, I get that, right? And I know that you are tired of getting picked on and marginalized in the world sphere. Mm-hmm. So the religions of the book, as they're called, right? Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are dominant. And so people will snicker and they look at the gods and go, well, of course there's not multiple gods. Right. The Christian will say, instead, obviously, Jesus came from a virgin and walked on water, right? And Muhammad obviously went and talked to God on the mountain. Hello, Hindus, your stuff's obviously not true and mine is. And that's super annoying. Now, as agnostic, I happen to think none of it is true, right? I probably don't think that guy has, or that person has, or God, sorry, has all those arms? Probably not. But Jesus also didn't walk on water, and Muhammad didn't talk to God, and Moses didn't split the Red Sea. Okay, is that the one he split? I think so.
Yeah.
Slash
you
didn't
look at
split.
Me.
I know, right? Nice job. Anyway, so look, what I'm asking you to do is, I hear you on all that, and you're right. You haven't gotten the best side of history for a long, long time. Now India is a lot more powerful, and you want to show pride, and I understand that. But we got to all live in the world together, so let's cut each other a little bit of a break. And if somebody uses your god, or I mean, like the Turks are so touchy about their leaders, or if you show their leader in a wrong way, So I've been there. I know the pride that comes along with it. But it's a big world. We got to live together. My opinion is, let her use Kali every once in a while. She probably means it in a good way and not a bad way. She's not trying to make fun of you. I think that she got married in India and considers Hinduism as a possible religion she might go into, because she's actually open-minded enough to consider it. It's not such a bad thing. That's my take. Okay. All right. So we got to take a quick break here. When we come back, who actually helped John Ossoff win that race in Georgia? I think that's an interesting story. Lots of interesting stories. We'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. I've got a lot of great tweets for you guys. Let me go quick here. Mario Rosette writes in, new TYT member, super excited to join as a producer today. Yay, thank you, Mario. Super appreciated. TYTnetwork.com/join. We will have a fun post game for all the members as usual today. And then Aggressive Progressive is at 9 o'clock Eastern. First segment's free, and then the whole show's for the members. Okay, Platypus Custard writes in, switch out Islam with Christianity and wait for the outrage. Imagine if a Muslim teacher quoted a Muslim scholar from 1853 about how Christianity is monstrous and barbaric.
Problematic.
Yeah. My guess is that you'd get a little bit more than suspension or whatever he got.
Reprimanded. Get a slap on the wrist. Yeah.
Chad Elliston writes in, it's disrespectful to use the image of God from any religion to describe her present feeling. So Chad, a little bit more on that side. Jessica, more on my side. Jessica Rio says, I'm on Katie's side. I'm not even a fan. This is not cultural appropriation. Rafer Madness says, I did some detective work. I've come to the conclusion that Katy Perry's intention was to communicate her mood on social media. And by the way, the members of the day are Benjamin Henry and Acacia Mendoza. So thank you, guys. We appreciate it. All right, what's next?
All right. John Ossoff, the Democratic House candidate, who nearly won a seat for a historically red district in Georgia, actually credits his success to women. So let's hear what he has to say about that.
This comes down to grassroots intensity. The thousands of volunteers and organizers, so much of it led by women who have been pounding the pavement and knocking on doors for months here in Georgia. And it's that kind of grassroots momentum that will carry us to victory on June 20th.
So obviously he's talking about women who are contributing to his campaign and knocking on doors, but also financially, right? So he actually raised $8.3 million for his campaign, including a six-figure contribution from the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. So here is a quote from their executive director. It says, "Today Georgians sent a message. They want reproductive health care champions like John Ossoff in Washington, D.C. Women marched to the polls to elect a candidate who will make protecting women's programs and access to health care a top priority." And obviously, in this situation, she is referencing his opponent, Karen Handel's sort of involvement with the Susan G. Komen and their sort of pulling away funding from Planned Parenthood back in 2012. And so he does prioritize that. And that is a stark contrast, especially for women in the state.
And him crediting women is both true and a smart political move. One, you want women to vote for you, of course, right? But this second is to really do what it forced our hand to do here, which is to highlight his opponent. Karen Handel ran the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Now their fight is against breast cancer, and it's a great fight, and they have a lot of money, and they give out to other organizations. And one of them was Planned Parenthood, because they do breast cancer screenings. Perfect, makes sense for what their cause is, right? Mm-hmm. But Karen Handel is actually deeply conservative and pro-life. And so she wanted to not give money to Planned Parenthood. When her plan was revealed, you know, it was such outrage that it cost Susan G. Komen Foundation $77 million in donations. So it's also huge incompetence on her part to not realize how much damage she would do to her own group. So she was removed from there. Then she went on to write a bellyaching book about how she's the victim, and she called it Planned Bullyhood. And so this is the person that Ossoff is running against. So if you're a person who cares about reproductive rights, but just or women's health, period, it seems like Karen Handel would be an ironic person to support.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I do think that he was making that stark contrast between them and sort of banking on that comparison. But I also think that there is a lot of truth to it, right? When he's talking about himself as sort of this anti-Trump person. And when you think about the resistance, the women and who are involved in like the Women's March are a huge, huge part of that. So women are doing the callings. And if you go on to a lot of the Women's March Facebook pages and things like that, you can see how outspoken they were about getting people out to the polls to vote for John Ossoff.
I'm always for highlighting the work that women do and the effort. Just a note to Handel, like for conservatives, like if you're going to be pro-life comprehensively, like in all of your policies. Don't just pick one and use that to just. I'm bothered.
Yeah, no, and look, real quick to your point. It's a curious position to be to call yourself pro-life and then to cut funding for breast cancer screening. Mm. From Planned Parenthood. And it costs her organization, and I hope it costs her this seat. Okay, we gotta go, guys. We do have one more segment for you guys, and we'll be back in 1 minute to do that. All right, back on the Young Turks. So if you haven't, if you've just joining us today, you're gonna start to notice we go out at 8 o'clock sharp because fun news coming out in a couple of weeks about who we're partnering up with next. And that's related to that. But we do come back right away, as you can see, and then give you the last couple of stories here. And by the way, I mentioned to you guys that I was going to tell you about how much Bill O'Reilly might have gotten when he left. We didn't get to that story. Let me just quickly say his contract, his last contract, which he just signed a couple of weeks ago. Lucky him. I mean, boy, if you're his agent and lawyer, nice job. Right? And you got to be thinking, yes, he could have gotten nothing. Instead, the idiots at Fox News signed a giant contract for him a couple of weeks ago. And it appears, according to the reports, to be $25 million bucks a year for at least 4 years. That's a $100 million contract. He's not going to get paid all of it again, according to the reports, but he is probably going to get a substantial portion of that. It drives me crazy that guys who get fired in positions of power, Wall Street, media, etc., get these huge golden parachutes. Roger Ailes got $40 million, bought a $36 million mansion in Palm Beach with some of the money, and now O'Reilly with a giant golden parachute as well.
And all the women that he like sexually harassed don't even get half of that.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. They paid out $13 million in settlements already, but that's probably about a quarter of what O'Reilly walked away with for getting fired. Yeah. Not for the stuff he did in the past. Amazing. Yeah. All right, what's next?
Zara has pulled a skirt from their website after some of their consumers complained that the design looked like Pepe the Frog. Now, a freelance writer from Chicago actually tweeted out a picture of the skirt. Her name is Megan Friedet. And so she said, this is bad on her Twitter. The tweet took off. And so she says, Zara is really out there trying to sell. I love that she starred Pepe, the frog skirt, apparently unaware of its current implications. So now, if you aren't familiar with the Pepe imagery, I'm going to give you a little bit of background. Pepe rose to prominence last year, appearing in memes about Adolf Hitler and the Ku Klux Klan. People who identified as members of white nationalists and other far right groups added the green frog emoji to their Twitter handle or display name. Many of you who like to comment mean things to me. Now, in September, the Anti-Defamation League said it was formally declaring Pepe the Frog a hate symbol. So basically, Zara's putting this hate symbol on their skirts. And sometimes, like I've said in previous stories, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. Except that Zara had some previous infractions. Now in 2014, they actually had to publicly apologize for selling a shirt that looked like concentration camp prisoner garb. Also in 2007, it stopped selling a purse that had swastika symbols embroidered on it. So I don't know if it's a, sometimes I think with certain situations like this, like you can't be that out of the know. They claim that it's fast fashion and there's not all this quality control, but I think it might be a publicity stunt sometimes when they do stuff like this, and especially if it's over and over again.
Yeah, it really is interesting. This is not the first time we're covering it. It's the different industries have different patterns, right? Like in the music industry, apparently you're allowed to be total scum if you're in that. Like, and I'm sorry if you're in the music industry, but the executives have notorious history of abusing women in their. And by the way, young boys as well who are in boy bands, etc. Not only ripping them off financially, but giant cases of sexual harassment, sexual assaults, etc., etc. And it's like, oh yeah, it's the music industry. And in the fashion industry, it is one scandal after another. Oh, did we put a swastika on our? Oh, look at all the attention we've received. Oh, golly gee, we did it again and again and again. So I'm beginning to think that it's not a coincidence that this is something that happens in the industry where they accidentally put something really horrible out there.
Right.
Have people get outraged, get, I guess, they consider this free advertising.
I guess. But it's not going to bring back denim skirts, Zara. They're over.
That's okay. Really
stop trying to make it happen.
Yeah. So the guy that I feel terrible for is Matt Furry, who is the guy who did Pepe the Frog in the first place. Apparently, I didn't know this, it was back in just in 05. I thought maybe it was like from the 1930s or something. And he's in LA's Koreatown.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God, what do they do? This is not the intent. They just kidnapped his caricature, right? And or his cartoon character, basically, in essence. And he says, this is my worst nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different cases of that, like especially right now in the media, when you think about the guy who made the bull on Wall Street with the fearless girl. He's like, this is not the intent of my artwork to be sort of like stampeding this little girl and against women's rights and things like that. So it is really unfortunate for a lot of artists who put their art out there for people to enjoy. And then it's sort of commandeered, especially for this hate group in particular by these people. I kind of feel bad for it. I feel for them.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
Also good people in the music and fashion industry, but you should probably get beyond these historical issues that you guys seem to have. Okay.
All right. For the past 5 months, 1,100 strangers have shown up at Matthew Herrick's house for sex. Now, Herrick says that his ex is creating fake profiles on the gay and bisexual dating app Grindr and sort of soliciting this sex. threats and sending people to his home and to his office. But now he's actually suing Grindr, saying it's their fault for not shutting down these fake accounts. Now, an ex-boyfriend of Herrick's, who he says he met on Grindr actually, has allegedly been creating fake accounts since October of 2016. Now, the accounts have Herrick's photos and personal details, including some falsehoods like a claim that he's HIV positive.
Jesus.
Now, the ex allegedly invites men to Herrick's apartment and the restaurant where he works. Sometimes as many as 16 strangers each day will show up looking for Herrick. In some instances, they are told not to be dissuaded if Herrick is resistant at first, as part of an agreed upon rape fantasy or role play. Okay, so now he is filing a complaint against Grindr. And according to the complaint, there have been more than 100 reports flagging the fake profiles in Grindr's app, resulting in only generic replies from the app saying thank you for your report. Now, I want to get into some of the legal implications of what Grindr might actually be liable for. But first, I want to get into how awful this is. Because this is harassment, in a lot of states that is illegal to create a fake profile and impersonate somebody for the purpose of cyberbullying. And this is not even just cyberbullying, this is flat out bullying harassment. So I don't totally understand why he's going after Grindr, not necessarily the ex-boyfriend. Mm-hmm. But Grindr is protected by Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act, which is a unique legal protection that gives a broad layer of immunity to online companies from being held liable for user-generated content. Now, Herrick's attorneys say that companies don't deserve special protections when their product is dangerous, and Section 230 doesn't give them protection in such cases. Further, they said that if a court won't hold Grindr responsible for having a dangerous product, we need to examine the liability of the sellers that are making available a dangerous product. Now, Grindr is claiming that they don't necessarily have the technology to do like face detection and to figure out which profiles are fake or not and which ones are impersonating. But I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so a couple of thoughts. First, let me make some serious comments before I get on to an inappropriate thing I'm going to say. Welcome to the Young Turks. Okay, so on a serious note, it's outrageous that this is not illegal. And unfortunately, especially impersonating the guy is not illegal. I think that saying, come and rape me, and or it's going to fantasy, etc., I would urge prosecutors to look a little harder there. I think that's probably is illegal. And if it isn't, it should be made illegal immediately. That's a no-brainer, right? So I think that's the most important part of this story. Because it's one thing to pull a prank when it goes on for a day and then you go, okay, fine, I was doing it. I don't do that, it's stupid, because they're showing up to his work, they're showing up to his house, he's gonna be freaked out. It's America, what if he has a gun and these strangers come to his house when he's not expecting it? It's a terrible, terrible idea. But to do it systematically over and over and to tell people to come and rape me, that's not cute, that's not funny, that's not anything that should be clearly illegal, okay? And it doesn't matter if it happens to a woman or in this case a guy, it's horrific either way, okay? So on the issue of why is he going after Grindr that you asked, Hannah, because Grindr has money and the guy who's doing it probably doesn't. Mm-hmm. So if there's no criminal protection, well, then you can't bring him to court or have him get arrested. And, mm-hmm. and again, we're not positive about the rape part, mm-hmm. encouraging the rape.
Right.
We know that there's no laws at this point in the state that they're in about impersonating someone. Mm-hmm. And then if you go after him civilly, he doesn't have much money. You go hit Grindr, they've got money. Now, it's not the only reason. They might think, hey, listen, man, the Grindr's not stopping it, and 16 dudes are showing up per day at my house and et cetera. So it's an interesting case.
Well, let me ask you a question, because it's not illegal to impersonate, but it is illegal to impersonate with the intent of cyberbullying, right? And so in this case, it's not just cyberbullying, I guess, because it's not necessarily like them interacting online, but he is giving people his address to both his home and workplace. This is like potentially very, very dangerous. So there's got to be some sort of legal implication within that.
Yeah, so it varies state by state. And so that's why. But if I'm this guy, I mean, I am talking to the prosecutors nonstop about, the different possible laws that he might be violating here. Right. And remember, there's also, he's going around telling people he's got HIV. I mean, you got defamation, yeah, and yeah, yada, yada.
Agree. I think the law needs to be in step with technology here. Mm. I do think they have the technology. Grindr does have the technology to flag these concerns and not just send a general thank you for your report. So I think that's an excuse. And I think it's interesting that they say that if Grindr won't be held responsible, they would start going after some of the apps that kind of house or make Grindr available. Mm-hmm. And I wonder kind of what recourse they have to pursue, yeah, you know.
So that's where I'm really split, because they say, hey, look, I don't know if Grindr has the technology, but certainly the technology exists. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably Grindr's thinking, like, it's going to cost a lot of money, and then yeah, I don't have any margin anymore, and yada, yada. But I'm also uncomfortable with saying you've got a really bad actor here who's mm-hmm. using your product. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I make hammers. I'm not responsible for the guy right. who uses the hammer to bash somebody's head in. Mm-hmm. And so Grindr, for a lot of folks, is a wonderful product.
Sure.
And not at all dangerous, but super fun, mm-hmm. right? I kind of understand Grindr's position, too. I'm very curious to see how the courts are going to settle it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's, I mean, making available a dangerous product. You could say Facebook has been responsible for other forms of bullying and harassment and deaths and things like that. So you can't, you wouldn't hold Facebook accountable.
Some people would try, but I vote no on that. I mean, but we've got to find a way to the best of the company's abilities, to try to make mm-hmm. sure that they take it down and have safeguards. And if the lawsuit winds up helping Grindr to get those safeguards, that's probably a good thing.
Right.
And why
definitely.
A lot of times lawsuits are underrated for the change that they can effectuate. And finally, the inappropriate thing I was going to say. I mean, being a straight guy, Jesus, man. I mean, look, he's probably a good looking guy or whatever, but sometimes I envy gay guys. 16 people a day? I mean, that is amazing. That's amazing. I mean, he doesn't want it. It's terrible. It's disastrous, etc.
Regardless if you're a straight guy or a gay guy, unsolicited sex and unsolicited people is
bad. No, of course. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if he had put the pictures up himself, he apparently could have gotten 16 guys.
We don't know, because we don't know what the details were. And I feel like it's an ex. Yeah. It's petty and it's ridiculous. Those invitations.
Yeah, he worked hard at those invitations.
Yeah.
But at least if you want it, and you don't need 16, you work a little and
but
get
also,
four.
How scary to have people who are coming to your house who think they're going to play out a rape fantasy.
Oh, no. Yeah,
I think he's just talking about sheer numbers here.
I'm
that it's impressive.
About if it was voluntary, the scope of the success you could have is fascinating on Grindr if you were so inclined. But maybe the straight guys these days are getting just 16 people too, and I don't know, because I don't.
We gotta get you on an app.
Yeah, no. No, we don't. Okay. But anyway, well, the thing we of course all agree on is if it's not voluntary, it is disastrous.
Yeah, really bad.
All right, we're out of time, guys. Now the post game, real quick. I don't know what we'll do, but it'll be fun. So do join up at tyrtnetwork.com.
I'll show you a story about how somebody impersonated me on a dating app.
Oh, wow. Super interesting. And then remember at 5:30 or 8:30 Eastern, George Zoon, the town hall in Flint. That's facebook.com/tytpolitics. And then at 9:00, Aggressive Progressives right here. The first segment is free, so everybody watch that. Okay, and if you like it, God bless, become a member. All right. Bye-bye.
Let's do this.